Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Market insight and analysis. You're listening to the opening bell of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
Good Friday morning. Welcome to Squawk on the Street. I'm Carl Quintanilla with Jim Cramer and David Faber. Futures revisit 4,300 overnight as Russian forces occupy Europe's largest nuclear plant in Ukraine. Get a short bounce here, though, on the best jobs number since July, 678,000, good revisions, and in a big surprise, flat wages month on month. We're going to begin, though, with tensions escalating between Russia and Ukraine. Russian forces have taken control of Europe's largest nuclear plant located in southeastern Ukraine. Shelling at the plant sparked a fire, which has since been extinguished. Ukrainian officials say the plant is secure, while the International Atomic Energy Agency says it has seen no change in radiation levels. Meantime, the U.S. embassy in Kyiv calling the attack a war crime NATO's Stoltenberg this morning, Jim, saying no-fly zone, still not in our interest, and that suffering would increase if troops were to get involved.
Yeah, look, I think that this is one of those events that just completely overshadows the employment number. Employment number is actually pretty good. I don't want to spend that much time on it because when this news happened, there was a massive sell-off in all the futures, and you could just watch it. I mean, the tick down was rather incredible. Too many people remember other times. They remember Fukushima, but of course they really remember Chernobyl. And those were accidents. Obviously, Putin knew where these nuclear power plants are. So, I don't want to say that it's just we should be down as much as Europe. But, David, you know, when you mention the word nuke and a nuke plant is under attack.
Yeah, it was very scary last night. The texts were flying.
Exactly. You're not trying to figure out whether you should buy Bristol Myers.
No. And people who obviously make investments as their day job, we're certainly very focused on that. It's hard to say you're thankful for anything going on right now, but at least that did not become something worse.
Put the fire out. I waited until they put the fire out.
Devastation.
I wasn't going to go to sleep till they put the fire out.
Yeah. The devastation is just horrible across the board, and obviously no signs of it stopping anytime soon.
No.
But Jim, you know, we are here also to talk about the financial markets, and I mean, when it comes to this conflict, I do continue to hear a lot more questions about Russian exposure, Russian leverage, what that will mean. We all know it's dollar-wise not that much, but it's still murky, to say the least, what it will mean for the European banks.
Right.
And others. So that continues to reverberate as well as these sanctions start to really dig on the Russian economy and as the oligarchs have to start to really potentially sell assets and deal with different things. You know, where are their liabilities? So that's coming up a lot. I thought it was, yesterday Jane Fraser at Citi did not really answer the question in terms of the Russian exposure, which seemed to have been a very straightforward. Yeah, but which is not a large, you don't want to take a write down that much. But it's relatively, it's tiny compared to their overall asset base.
True.
It's 0.3%. I mean, she wants, you want to be focused on the humanitarian crisis for obvious reasons. But there are those who look at that and go, they'll continue to be concerned.
Well, look, if you're going to come in every morning, and Carl, you know this, you're going to spend for the next 3 hours. If you're going to come in every morning, and you're going to have the possibility of something nuclear or something that is just devastating, a kind of a Guernica of a city. We're not going to really want to say, Jay Powell's got he got some leverage here. And anyway, commodity prices keep going through the roof every single time. And there's 11 million barrels that are produced by Russia. And are we really going to just take it all off? And how are we going to take it all off without having to deal with Iran? And so you just get a parade of horribles that just makes it so that you just say, this is... It just doesn't let you be granular about stocks, but you can't not follow them. Because if something, I'm not saying good happens, but if something ends, then you'll be looking, saying, okay, look, what did well? So you got to look.
Yeah, I mean, the de-escalation scenario is hard.
Yes.
JPM's note this morning says, look, We got more talks scheduled for early next week,
right?
Which is a positive. But it's not like sanctions are going to go away.
No.
Even if we do get some kind of stability diplomatically.
And I do think that there's two ways to look at the sanctions. One is to say that the rich people will be hurt, including Putin, who's the richest guy there. But then the other thing is that they canceled. There's no press now. There's nothing. If you're in Russia, you have no idea how they're doing, other than the fact that they're winning.
Yeah,
right?
they have
no other information.
No, it's an important point.
There's no New York Times.
They have more or less, even those that were considered independent have been muted at this point.
Right.
With a handful, the small group of somewhat independent news operators in the country. So, yeah, there's not a lot of information. Now, that said, there are ways to get information to the Russian population. And there is, I think, to a certain extent, a belief on the part of many of them that they know that they're being
Let's say they're coming up from the south, the Russian army. And, Carl, I would say that it's very easy to broadcast a Putin move, which says they are winning. I mean, people were saying yesterday, well, how could he say he's winning? Well, I mean, like, let's say they come up from the south and they just do a pincer move. They come from the north, they come from the west, and then it doesn't really matter what Zelensky says. I'm not, look, I don't want this to happen. But I'm just saying that you could be a Russian and think that they're winning.
Yeah. Well, TASS this morning, the agency says the upper house of parliament in Russia approving legislation introducing jail terms for people who circulate what they call fake information. So they're definitely putting the clamps on the free flow of information.
If I got in this business, I was told one thing, which is never mention the Nazis. Never mention Hitler. Never. Because that's off the table. And I keep wanting to come back to that. I keep wanting to come back to say it's off the table. You can't mention it. This is in the camp of that. Now, obviously, we could say, well, where were you with Rwanda, the Nazis? Where were you with Boston? You know. But what I'm saying here is that there was a moment right before Hitler was really basically gave Chamberlain a deal of lifetime, which turned out not to be peace in our time. The generals said there was a tremendous book that Tupper Taylor, who was really one of the greatest historians, did this book just about the days before Munich, where there was going to be a coup by the German generals saying, this man's crazy. This man's crazy. We got to stop him. He's going to Czechoslovakia. He's going to kill. We're all going to get killed. They have a great army. And then Chamberlain said, hey, it's yours. We want peace in our time. And that was the end of the general coup. The generals couldn't have a coup. I think people are waiting for the generals to have a coup here.
In Russia.
Yes. I think that's what they're waiting for. And I think that we're going to be waiting for Godot.
Yeah. Wells Fargo had a conference call with Admiral Stavridis yesterday where he argued that's the least likely scenario at this point.
That's the bottom of everybody's list. They say least likely, most hopeful.
Right.
Yes.
The question, obviously, that many people ask, and we have, and nobody knows the answer, is where is Putin on the scale from erratic to suicidal?
Right.
I think most people are hoping he's still on the erratic side.
I know. Look, and the other way to look at it is, I'm looking, okay, so the French market's down 3.7. And you could say, like David said, well, a lot of that is, the French banks. But look, everybody here just thinks that J.P. Morgan is a French bank. That's what happened last time in 2011. They're not. So what happens, all of these, and I'm going to talk about Chernobyl when we get a chance, but there's just this moment where you just say everybody's guilty, everybody's connected, until they're not.
We're going to talk about the differences, though, between U.S. and Europe today and dollar-euro. But first, let's go to Eamon Jabbers for more on the conflict. Good morning, Eamon.
Good morning, Carl. In the last hour, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the military alliance is not planning to put boots on the ground or airplanes in the sky in Ukraine, despite those horrific situations that we've seen unfolding there. Here's what he said.
And of course, the only way to implement a no-fly zone is to send NATO planes, fighter planes, into Ukrainian airspace and then impose that no-fly zone by shooting down Russian planes. And our assessment is that we understand the desperation, but we also believe that if we did that, we'll end up with something that could end in a full-fledged war in Europe involving many more countries and causing much more human suffering.
Those comments coming despite the apocalyptic pictures that we saw coming out of Ukraine last night. Russian forces attacking and shelling Europe's largest nuclear plant in Ukraine. The video showed what appeared to be tracer fire as round after round impacted buildings on the site of the plant, igniting a blaze at the facility and prompting Ukrainian officials to appeal to the West desperately for help and warning of a meltdown that could be bigger than the Chernobyl disaster. By daylight, though, the photos were more reassuring. Fire crews on scene, buildings smoking, but the blaze contained for now. Officials said no radiation was released in the incident. And in a bizarre twist, Ukrainian officials said Russian troops have taken control of that site, but they're allowing Ukrainian staffers in the plant to operate it today. Three Ukrainian soldiers were killed and two wounded in the attack overnight. Officials said the building that sustained the most damage was a training center and not part of the nuclear reactor. Back over to you, Desmond.
Eamon, appreciate that. We'll have a lot more from you, of course, later on during the day, Eamon Javers. We do want to touch on the jobs number. Non-farm payrolls up 678, well above the forecast of 440,000. And that boost comes as a lot of the Omicron cases have eased. Unemployment ticks down to 3.8. Average hourly earnings flat month on month, which was the big surprise, Jim. Year on year, 5.1. And prior was 5.7.
Oh, do you know how much the market would be up? But yeah, look, you can't asterisk a nuclear, you know, power plant under attack. But these were like, if you were Jay Powell, you say, you know what? What'd I tell you? It's starting to come back. People starting to come back. The labor force looks like that they, it was Omicron. You eliminate some of the benefits. People are looking for jobs again. There's 11 million job openings. Over time, maybe in the next 6 months, they'll be filled. And this is what I told you.
Right. Although your contention the market would be up, I don't know. I mean, isn't it always you get the reaction of the bond market? Everybody thinks the Fed's going to now go even tighter, and so then we end up actually not up at
the
all.
Wages aren't the wage increases were nil.
Right.
What does Powell want? He wants not a lot. He wants some wage increase because he actually believes that people should work for a living as opposed to just CEOs getting all the money. He wants a good job growth. He wants lower inflation, and he's just not getting the latter.
Well, we're at 3.8% now.
That's pretty good.
That is quite good.
But we've got quite commodity inflation everywhere. I mean, you know, wheat.
But we have a talent shortage across the board. You talk to
talent
any
talent shortage.
Yes, you talk to any CEO, and they will say their first.
I thought you were talking like the Knicks or something.
We have one there as well.
We're working on that too.
By the way, we can go through virtually every single team in the New York area and say the same thing. But back to CEOs, they will tell you that, you know, finding talent is by far their number one priority.
Well, there are no, you know,
and keeping them is their second priority.
Engineers.
Yeah.
Like, you just need engineers.
And then that goes even there across the board, labor shortage in general.
We need computer engineers.
We need truck drivers still, too.
We need truck drivers. We got to make it so that truck drivers, so you can't roll back safety, the number of hours they work. But you can take matters in your own hands the way that Costco did. You know, they have seven container ships.
Right.
They have seven ships that they're leasing.
Home Depot does, too, right?
Can't be at the mercy.
Yeah.
The ones, but Home Depot didn't even have that great a quarter because they couldn't pass on a lot of their costs. Freight is such a terrible, when you read about freight, what that means is we hired planes from FedEx to bring in sweaters. You don't make money when you're bringing in sweaters via FedEx planes.
No.
David?
Well, somehow FedEx can't figure out a way to make money either.
I think FedEx's quarter's going to be good.
You do, huh?
Yes, I do.
All right,
well, did you see UNP yesterday? Record high? I mean, people talk about stagflation and recession, but how does that happen when rails are
FedEx?
My Chapel Trust sold that like up 40 points, and it could have went up another 10. But, you know, that's a high quality problem. We have a talk at 12:30 today with Rick Moncrief, who is the CEO of Devon, who put everybody on the path of let's make money. Let's not just drill, baby, drill. And what are they going to do with oil at these prices? Are they going to with a $30 cost basis? Are they going to keep that tight rein on production? Or are they going to drill more?
I asked the CEO of ExxonMobil that question yesterday, actually.
But I have Devon.
Yeah, but I had ExxonMobil.
I have Mike Wirth.
I
went to dinner with Mike Wirth.
No, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
It came up in Jen Psaki's press briefing yesterday. She's like, there are 9,000 leases out there. Go talk to the oil companies about whether they have enough money to start drilling on those leases.
Okay, so I hear that. That's fatuous. You've got to get the oil to the market, so you have to have FERC be a little bit more giving. You can't get permits to be able to. Someone said to me, Jim, why do we have Russian oil coming into Boston? I said, well, because we can't ship it from the south because the pipelines aren't allowed.
problem.
It's not like we don't have pipelines that come from Houston all the way up to New York. We do.
Well, you see, there's a place called Boston that's north of New York where the Celtics play. You familiar with them? Patriots.
Put it on the Acela. What's your?
Yeah, I don't.
Really,
doesn't
too
get,
slow.
If it gets here, it can't get there. No. All right. You tell me.
I'm not being facetious. You see, there's need pipelines, but no one wants a pipeline underneath them. I had a pipeline underneath me. Believe me, I got a calendar once a year.
By the way, just wait till they have to build a pipeline system for carbon capture. Nobody's going to want those either.
Oh, God, you're really playing that Exxon card.
I'm not playing the Exxon card. I'm learning things, and it's
Devon's not as big as Exxon.
No, Devon is far smaller than Exxon.
He's minimizing the club.
And frankly, less significant and not a
Don't
global
take a
company.
Person. We'll take a look at futures here this morning. Bunch of company notices we haven't gotten to yet, including Gap. Got some news on Disney this morning. Jim mentioned Costco, Broadcom, Marvell, Amazon, Coinbase, all when we return.
You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
Getting some news on Disney, which was first reported by The Information, but they are confirming that in a first for them, they will expand Disney Plus offerings to consumers by introducing an ad-supported tier beginning in the U.S., David, late 22, plans to go international next year, something some of the street has called for Netflix to do. But we'll see what it means for Disney.
Yeah, I think the end of the release is perhaps the most interesting line. The ad-supported offering is viewed, this is their opinion, as a building block in the company's path to achieving its long-term target of 230 to 260 million Disney Plus subscribers by fiscal year 24. That is a lot of what Disney will continue to be judged on, despite the fact that obviously it's a lot more than just direct-to-consumer. It's a studio, it's theme parks. It's still ESPN, which produces a prodigious amount of cash flow, which helps, by the way, with what is a fairly large amount of debt. Sometimes we forget how much debt they took on
the dividend.
2 years ago.
The dividend.
Remember when they ran into the, obviously, the heart of the pandemic there and everything had to close. But Disney is a success in direct-to-consumer. The only question is how much. It is one of the dominant players. The only question, again, is how much. Not just how big, but how much money are they going to have to spend to continue?
Right.
And that goes to the larger question that a lot of investors are asking these days, which is what is this ultimately going to look like as the competition with Netflix continues to increase for Paramount, for Warner Discovery, for our own parent company Comcast with its Peacock service? What is it all going to look like in terms of what you're spending on content to continue to make your service one that is robust enough to continue to gather subscribers, but at the same time actually make it profitable? Ad-supported is one way to try to do that.
Right. Now, again, people may say, obviously, the market doesn't like what they're doing. And that's the opposite. But the market is focused on how much the nuclear so-called attack, whatever you want to call it, is impacting Europe, which is therefore going to impact us. So you're going to see stocks that are down today that really had unbelievable quarters. And I want people to realize it's not because the quarters weren't believable. Now, there's a lot of headline writing that says they'll look at a stock that's down and they will come up with a thesis why it's down. Well, the thesis is pretty simple. We're linked with Europe. We're linked with Russia. And when the smoke clears or the radiation clears, if they ever do something like that horrible, we'll be saying, OK, who did well? And you'll look at Disney and say that was a good idea. Maybe we go back to Disney because Disney was down $2 and now it's only down $1. I'm not grasping at straws. I'm saying that please look it through the prism of Europe, which is down horribly, and then make your decisions. Realize that there's some great opportunities.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of Europe's challenges later on in the show. Euro is just getting hammered today, set for the biggest daily drop in about 2 years. We'll get Cramer's Mad Dash and countdown to the opening bell. Don't go away.
Imagine you're on a John Deere mower. with a smooth ride, intuitive controls, and attachments for every season. You just have to get in the seat. Learn more at johndeere.com/get in the seat or visit a dealer near you.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
That overnight low in futures, right when we were getting the reports of the nuclear plant in Ukraine, kind of matched with Tuesday's intraday low, just south of 4,300. We're off of those levels now. VIX is still elevated, just south of 34, and the opening bell in about 6 minutes.
It is Friday, 3.5 minutes before we get started with the last day of trading of what has been an eventful week, to say nothing of a volatile week as well. Let's get to a mad dash here.
I am very impressed with Sonia Syngal. I had her on, this CEO of Gap Stores. She laid out a plan turning the company around. Do you know she's doing it? She's doing it. There is a big and real turn. A lot of it, David, is Athleta, which is doing off the charts numbers. That's the comparison to Lululemon, doing great. Gap actually had a pretty good quarter. Old Navy had a good quarter. And I will tell you, they've closed the stores that are not doing well. The stock has come down tremendously. It's come down too much. Sells at 8x earnings. I think those estimates are going to be way too low. I'm going to give you the opinion. You know, Morgan Stanley says don't get too excited. The story isn't as good as people think. I think it is. And I think it's been it's a turn to be noticed because everyone's given up on Gap.
Right. Well, it had that incredible move during, right from the beginning of the pandemic through much of 2020. It was one of the best performers of the year.
Well, look, they have Athleta's doing, you know, Athleta's a driver. Athleta's a driver. Now, we'll say one of the things you got to put out, they use freight. They had to pay big freight, but they still did well. Every chart looks like that. Oh, my God.
We had a bunch of downgrades last couple months because inventories were coming back.
Yes.
Maybe the risk of promotions. And then worries about the low end, right? And Old Navy specifically.
I think that, frankly, she defied the critics. When she came on Mad Money, there's been a couple people come on Mad Money, they really draw a line in the sand, and I love it. And Gina Drozos at Signatures, stock was at 20. She's listening, that's it. It's done going down. I felt that the gap line in the sand has been reached, and it's been beaten. And I'm very proud. It's a real turn there. I don't know if it goes to 20 or to 25. It's got to show multiple quarters. But I like that it's led by Athleta, which is a real division. Got to get Sarah. You know, Sarah knows that.
She does.
Sarah Eisen knows that segment.
Yeah, she does.
She's Commonwealth Dollar. She's so right. You know, let's go to Europe. We got to go to where? You want to go to?
I did see her tweeting on the dollar. Yes. It's quite strong.
Got Euro 110 and a bunch of calls again for parity. We're back here, Jim.
I know. I go a lot, well, haven't been lately, but we go a lot to Europe. I will tell you that you don't think anything's cheap at all. It just don't. I mean, it's just not like that. It's not like if you go to Mexico and it's like really inexpensive. It's not.
No, it's not. It's not a goal.
You don't see it.
But it's better than at 120.
I once went when it was 140. I had a dinner at a you know, kind of an okay restaurant, Alain Ducasse, and it was $700. I threw it back. I said, it should be $70. He said, but it's the wine. They always do that. It's the wine. The Margaux. It's the 1996 Margaux. Remember these days?
They're back.
We are back. It's awfully loud down here this morning. Let's get the opening bell and the CNBC Real-Time Exchange here at the big board. It's S&P Global celebrating its merger with IHS Markit. By the way, happy birthday to the S&P today. Turned
really?
65.
Well, you know, Doug Peterson has done a remarkable job. This is a big company. See the market gap?
Enormous.
For the $150 billion. This acquisition is fantastic. Buy the stock. It's the best acting fintech there is. And this merger is fantastic. You see Dan Urey a lot. He's from IHS Markit. I love this merger, and that's all I have to say.
There's the open. Dow's down 360 to start. You guys were just talking about Gap. Costco comps up 12.9 is a beat. Barclays calls it the GOAT retailer in that
the GOAT
they
retailer.
Can take share, they have things in stock, right. Maybe a special dividend down the road, they can always increase fees.
Rich Galanti, the great CFO who runs the call, both teased you on the special dividend and teased you on the raised membership. Now, the analysts, all they try to do is say, well, look, Rich, how about, isn't it like Netflix? They raise money. Well, I don't know. And then the next guy comes back and says, well, isn't it like, you know, Amazon, Prime? And he's not going to do that. He's a surprise factor guy. The stores in China are doing incredible. They're adding more stores than people thought. Hearing aids are back. Food court is back. Free samples are back. Bye. Ciao, Trust Jose. It's down because... Now, it's down because if someone sells it because it's down, please go listen to the conference call. I mean, at one point he does say, knock wood, the costs are under control. The costs were better than it's ever did than the last three quarters. They had an amazing quarter. It was an amazing quarter.
I think you're somewhat excited about Costco. I'm picking that up. Picking up a little enthusiasm.
I think operating margins were a beat. That said, Jim, we got every Dow stock red. And to your earlier point, JPM's the worst.
Well, I mean, you know, Jamie Dimon, ever since he made those intemperate comments about fintech, well, fintech's been down more than his stock, but it's kind of, you know, fintech. You know, he feels very beaten down. He needs to buy.
He feels beaten down.
He needs to buy $20 million worth of stock.
15% for the year.
He should buy 20.
Obviously, far more than the S&P's 9% retreat so far during the course of this year.
You were with Jane Fraser yesterday.
I was.
I didn't want to buy that stock after I saw that interview.
You didn't. Why not?
Why?
Yeah, why
because
not?
I felt like that. Holy cow. What a hand she's got. She's under. Now she owns it. She's been there for a year. But I think that the holes in the bucket there are too great.
As she
dear
said,
Liza.
It's going to take some time. Next 3 to 5 years, getting to an 11 to 12% ROTCE may not be exciting that many investors. There's a. In a sense, they've almost got to cycle through some disappointed investors and get a new investor base that's a believer.
That's very right. That's a very good point. People who come in and just say, listen, she's very smart, which she clearly is.
Yes.
She has to take a lot of actions, which she will do, and then it'll be fine.
But it doesn't happen overnight.
No.
It doesn't happen overnight.
No.
Increasing the tech spend to $11 billion.
Tech spend.
30,000 software engineers, which obviously I asked her about.
Why don't they bring in Splunk, Gary Steele? See that?
I saw also Hellman and Friedman and Splunk.
7.5%.
Kind of an interesting choice. This is typically a private equity firm. You know, maybe they're running out of deals to do in terms of the full acquisition.
Yeah.
They're obviously just.
But that's all. It's all systems go for Splunk. So what you should do is just try to get Gary Steele on your show.
Cisco's not buying them, right?
No, that's not going to happen. But I'm going to have Gary Steele on the show. He doesn't even have a Splunk email yet.
Really?
Yeah, he was using like a Yahoo or something, you know.
Have a look at Cisco. I mentioned that because, of course, about a month ago or so, the Journal wrote some stories saying that they'd made a bid at some point. But again, new CEO, Hellman and Friedman now in there at a 7.5% stake.
Well, I just thought it was interesting because Splunk actually had a good quarter, even though it was leaderless. It seems like that they finally got their model correct, and Doug Merritt wasn't there. He was kind of like he didn't get to the promised land. Chevron's down. That's interesting because they're the chief beneficiary of what's going on in terms of higher oil prices. So people who are selling Chevron just are simply just saying, you know what, the S&P's down, I'm going to sell Chevron. That's an ill-advised strategy.
Yeah. Oil, by the way, headed for its biggest weekly gain in almost 2 years, but it is financials that are the weakest sector, down almost 2.5%. Semis are actually the relative bright spot between Broadcom and Marvell.
Well, Hock-Tan told a great story. He's more than just cell phones. It's fantastic. Now, the one that should be up the most, and I'm speaking my own book here, is Marvell. But Marvell had a number of price target cuts, but that's because it was in the 90s. And I thought the Marvell quarter was better than the Broadcom quarter. But Hock-Tan, he's got that great dividend.
Mm-hmm.
Am I at all relevant to you?
I am trying to read through some things that people have, you know, people text during the show. This is an interactive show. I think we can all argue. You get texts, I do.
We get texts from sources.
And yes, I am listening to you, and I'm also reviewing something in order to try to add to the conversation. Is that okay?
I'm noticing the banks are down. I'm wondering, is any of that concern you were talking earlier about European exposure in some way?
I haven't heard a word you said.
I'm reading about
Disney.
By the way, that wouldn't be a bad thing.
Speaking of Disney,
I'm happy to talk to him.
Speaking of Disney, we've talked a bit about the liabilities, Jim, regarding Europe, but Deutsche today upgrades six to buy, and they mention parks, the disruption to MLB, which they think is a big competitor to theme parks. They think even the gas prices, historical correlation, not as strong as you'd think.
Absolutely right, and I think that we're going to be we're going to get a lot of good news about pricing at parks. I do think the consumer choice that they're offering is really terrific. More pricing power in tiers. So I think the people who are selling Disney, again, are selling it because the S&P is down. And I urge people to say, you know what? I'm not saying that we should forget about what's going on over in Europe. But remember that, that Disney is not sitting there and saying, woe is me, I don't care about Chernobyl. You know, Chernobyl being the rubric for...
Yeah, you're very focused on that. That was 1986.
Okay. Well, okay, so listen. So here's Chernobyl. On April 26th,
really?
The Dow was at 18...
We didn't... Thankfully,
yeah, yes.
Nothing like that happened.
But Dow Jones was at 1,841. It fell to 1,758 almost immediately, a 4% decline. When I was during that period, all of my clients at Goldman were shorting bread stocks. They were shorting milk. If they could find milk. They were shorting Sweden because of the course of the radiation. And they ended up being down big because by May 28th, the market was up huge.
Well, thankfully, when it comes to this Ukraine nuclear plant, there was no radiation.
And some made this point last night that they're not building plants the way they built Chernobyl.
No. Chernobyl was faulty from the beginning.
Wait, so did you see the special?
Yes, the special. The HBO show was a wonderful show.
It was an amazing show.
Yes.
And it had the added advantage of being true.
The political ramifications of Chernobyl in terms of Gorbachev and the overall Soviet system, actually, it was something that I didn't appreciate until I watched that. I don't know why you keep talking about Chernobyl.
Okay, here's why I'm talking about Chernobyl, because the market rallied after Chernobyl. It first went down 4, and then it rallied. So I'm saying that what you see on your screen could change if there is some sort of brokered piece, which I know people have just written off, if there is a surrender, which would be horrible, or if there would be a, we can have a rump state,
balkanized.
None of those things seem likely right now.
Nothing ever seems likely.
Understood. So you're just saying beware of a potential rally if we were to get...
Right. Look, I think Friday's bad.
And
you know,
cessation
to
hostilities in some way.
Right. Well, I'm just saying that the employment number was good, that there's a lot of strength in the economy, but there does, you know, the inflation, if you listen to the Costco call, has simply, you know, has gotten stable, okay? And Costco's the second largest retailer. Walmart, they're, you know, first, things are okay. And so I'm just saying that if you got a break in Europe, then yes, you would say, why did I sell everything? Otherwise, you should own oils. But you can't own nothing but oil because that's a stupid sign. That's what a lot of hedge funds went bust in 82 to 84 because they only owned oil. Dome Petroleum. Remember Dome Petroleum?
That's sort of, people are arguing now that's the millennials' new favorite. You know, they got out of coins, right? Got out of memes, and now they're all about WTI.
They really are.
And even some Russian.
No, but one of the reasons I wanted Moncrief from Devon, which is not as big as Exxon, is because he really uniquely understands this. And it's kind of interesting because when you speak with younger people, which I do, you know, these were people who, they owned Snowflake, which they thought, by the way, was a meteorological play. Now suddenly, they want to own, hey, I saw that guy, David, the really good-looking guy. They always say that. Good for you. And he says that Exxon is good. I said, no, he went to Exxon. He never said Exxon was good. No, I want to own some Exxon because they, you know, they're big.
Yeah, but they all care about climate change, too.
Yeah, but Exxon's doing more about climate change than anyone. You see the board?
They're doing a lot. They're doing a lot. Whether or not it's going to work.
David, I like the viewers who are writing in. Am I at all relevant to you? Which is what you just said.
Oh, meanwhile, I got a text from, I can't even say his name, but he says to say hi.
Somebody just texted to
say
that.
Well, I got a text that actually has.
Right. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do a favor report on something else that also could be a gating issue for some of the market.
You do it on sweet greens, right?
On antitrust. And I want to talk about antitrust this morning in part because, of course, this Amazon-MGM deal, which conceivably will get closed prior to even hearing from the FTC. That at least is reporting that the Journal has as of the last day or so. Can't confirm that. You can see that there. Remember, they announced the deal. It seemed to have absolutely no antitrust implications. And yet, this is the environment that many companies are operating in right now. The FTC, by the way, is 2-2. And they're still waiting for that third appointment, a Democrat, which would make it 3-2. So you're not going to get anything from the FTC. And Amazon may be in a position where they're like, fine, we're going to go ahead and close and we'll see what happens. But it does put a spotlight yet again on antitrust enforcement. And it's something we've talked about a great deal here. Obviously, in light of Microsoft's pending acquisition of Activision as well.
Right.
But even the president brought it up in the State of the Union address. Take a listen.
Capitalism without competition is not capitalism. Capitalism without competition is exploitation. You got four basic meatpacking facilities. That's it. You play with them or you don't get to play at all. And you pay a hell of a lot more.
By the way, echoing words of Tim Wu, who is a White House special assistant on tech and competition policy, that capitalism without competition is not capitalism. It's interesting here, of course, antitrust theory has been largely based in this country on the effect on the consumer. And in fact, that's still where the law takes you. If you were to go to court on many of these things, many people believe that you ultimately, if you're a corporation and you're actually not distressing the consumer, you're going to win. But the administration is also putting in labor as an important constituency here, and in part that is some of the arguing that that Mr. Wu has made in the past as well. By the way, he referenced meatpackers. One of the deals in jeopardy is Sanderson Farms. Remember that? Continental Grain, Cargill buying Sanderson Farms. That was a deal announced back in August. I am told that, yeah, unless they make changes to that transaction, it's not going through as is currently contemplated. Elizabeth Warren also writing a letter to Jonathan Kanner at the antitrust division of the DOJ back in mid-February, February 16th, saying they have concerns about that $4.5 billion deal as well. So as it currently stands, Sanderson Farms not going to happen.
How about aluminum?
But they do seem interested in trying to potentially change the deal, maybe bring in private equity in some way. Maybe you can figure something out that will satisfy DOJ. You mentioned Alumina Grail. I'm glad you did.
That's such a great deal.
There's an example of the EU getting involved. Alumina owned Grail. And then they spun it off back in 2016.
Right.
Then they came back and said, you know what? We want to own it again. And they bought it. And they closed the deal in August, but they still may face a challenge from the FTC. The EU is coming after them as well. They've kept it as a separate entity, but they own it. Once again, the question there from the FTC seems to be, is the market for multiple cancer blood tests will become so large that Illumina will have the incentive to kill or disable emerging rivals to Grail?
The answer is no.
All right. It may well
Grail
be.
Grail is the holy grail. They have you with a little bit of blood. They may be able to tell you where they have cancer.
Right.
And we need Illumina to blow it out. Grail doesn't have scale. Illumina's got scale.
United
That's
Healthcare and Change Healthcare. Of course, that deal was opposed. It was this week. Sorry, I'm looking for the paper here still.
Is there cancer opposing as much as FTC?
I think Cantor is going to be very aggressive. Listen, all of this, we're not giving you anything that you didn't already know if you follow the headlines. But what it does have, of course, is a chilling effect on the willingness of companies to pursue large transactions. And they need to be aware of any number of different things here. Now, is the FTC going to take everybody to court and lean to con? No, they don't have the resources to do that. You want to try to chill it before they even think about doing the deal. Because ultimately, if you do get to court, maybe Microsoft will have to go to court to get Activision done. Many people think, regardless of the judge you draw, you're going to win on the law. Now, you never know, and politics plays an important part of
this. IHS
so you need a political strategy, you need a practical strategy if you're
announcing
a deal.
You need to get through the thicket.
And you need a tone that's not necessarily straightforward antagonistic. But overall, antitrust, not hurting the market as much right now, Jim, as volatility, but something we certainly have to keep a close eye on.
Okay, so October of 2021, IHS Markit and S&P Global announced the merger. It took them this long to close European regulatory.
Yes.
So the thicket is really...
Navigating the EU, not to mention China, and obviously a very aggressive FTC and DOJ here in the United States is a key consideration of anyone announcing a deal, certainly anything with any sort of implication whatsoever. And again, back to where we started, when Amazon announced their intent to acquire MGM, nobody thought that had any antitrust implications. Many people continue to believe that, but that's the focus here. Large tech getting larger, all of the power that they have. The question is, could you win in court?
Should we look at Jonathan Kander's record at Paul Weiss and wonder whether he was a challenger of antitrust?
He wasn't.
Let's do that.
No, we'll do a lot. We'll continue on this.
You know, Anthony Blinken was an associate at Paul Weiss?
You mean the Secretary of State?
Yeah, Secretary of State.
A lot of notables at that firm.
No one really remembers it.
A lot of notables. Yes.
I turned it down.
Guys, we're holding 43.15. Twos, tens, now down to 25 basis points. Let's get to Bob Pisani. Hey, Bob.
Morning, guys. Considering that attacking a nuclear power plant is a whole nother level of tail risk, we're only down 1% on the S&P 500. That's not bad at all. And the usual game is being played out here. They're going for commodities, so metal stocks, energy stocks continuing to hold up. Occidental is always on the biggest gainer list almost every day. Materials are strong. Tech is flattish. Some of the other sectors, it's curious to watch Consumer Staples Week because generally they have been holding up very well in days when we're stressed in the market, obviously sort of low volatility. Banks is the real problem. As Carl mentioned, yields down 11 basis points to 1.73 on the 10-year. Here you see like stocks like Hormel have done very well this week on the stress level. So you got low volatility. Some of them are dividend payers, generally holding up very well. If you look for the week, companies that have held up well, generally companies that had low volatility, utilities, gold miners, telecom stocks, waste management, and some of the utilities that are out there, McCormick Public Storage, and a few of these REITs generally are the ones that are holding up fairly well. When they start selling off, that means that you're completely de-risking the market. You don't even want a U.S.-based product. Just to bring you up to date on the Russian trading situation here, we had some new trading halts today at the New York Stock Exchange, and now basically halting the majority of the Russian ETFs that have been trading. Now, remember, the underlying stocks are no longer trading anywhere, including Moscow, including London and Germany and in the United States. Now the underlying ETFs themselves are being halted here. And again, these halts are just generally for regulatory concern. Nobody's delisting anything. Nobody's doing anything. Just a regulatory halt. They could obviously begin trading them at any time if they want to, but as of now, they don't. Curiously, the VanEck Russia ETF, RSX, which trades on a different exchange, as of this morning, here it is. It's still trading. Rather remarkable, considering that we have no stocks essentially that are open underneath. And again, this is that remarkable thing about ETFs, where the trading community can essentially make an estimate on where they think it may be. But this is sparking a huge debate in the investment community, in the mutual fund community, in the ETF community, about what's investable and what is not investable. And somebody had a great line to me the other day. They said globalization in reverse for the ETF and the mutual fund business. Remember, we had global investments expanded dramatically as indexing expanded, ETFs expanded in the last 20 years. Everyone started investing globally, partly based on market capitalization. And a lot of that is now being debated. It's not just Russia being delisted from the global indexes. Obviously, this is a war situation and rather serious. But there's a lot of debate about what would qualify as an investable or an uninvestable investment at this point. For example, China has shown great belligerence. Should there be discussions about having people no longer invest in China? Not necessarily delisting, not forcing it, but what extent should people be investing? And should the question no longer just be market capitalization, should there be a broader discussion about what is investable and what is not investable, given the market volatility? Remember, China has done things that's created tremendous market volatility, but obviously doesn't rise to the level necessarily of having a lot of indexes delist you. Nobody's done that yet. There have been some stocks from China that have been delisted here in the United States. So it's a big debate, Carl, in the investment community. What's investable and not on the global sphere? Back to you.
Good point.
All right, Bob, thanks so much, Bob Pisani. Later on today, join Jim for a 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time CNBC Investing Club live monthly meeting. As he said, it's Devin's Rick Moncrief will be his special guest. You can sign up for the club at cnbc.com/join the club. That's going to be a good one, Jim. Look forward to that.
Oh, thank you.
Before we go to break, time for the bond report. As we look how treasuries are faring this morning, we mentioned the yield curve and the spread between twos and tens was 40 basis points last week. Got down to 30 this morning, now closer to 25. 10-year, 173, and the Dow's down almost 500. You can see the sea of red on the S&P directionally getting back in the neighborhood of Tuesday's low, which was 42.79, still well above the low for the year of 41.14 back on February 24th. We're back in a minute. Jim, what's on Matt tonight?
One of the most freaking guests I've ever had is Gary Steele. He kept saying, buy proof point, buy proof point. And then, boom, they got a bid. It was a huge home run. Now he's at Splunk. So I say, buy Splunk, buy Splunk. Now, don't do it right now because the market's horrible. By the end of the day, people are going to be selling because they're afraid of the weekend. But this man's a winner, okay? He's a money maker.
Jim, good weekend, good week. We'll see you.
Look, you know, I was with my daughter when the fire came on. I said, listen, we just got to wait for the fire to come out and decide whether it's a good time or not. The fire got out.
Yeah. We're going to stay glued to the tape today, that's for sure. We'll see you tonight. Mad Money, 6 p.m.
You've been listening to the opening hour of CNBC's Squawk on the Street.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.